Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. I'm a senior fellow at Bruegel, and I am joined here today by two of our most senior and most fabulous fellows, Jean Pisani-Ferry and André Sapir, well known to all of you who are longtime Bruegel fans. And we are going to talk about the snap French elections. This has been the big story since the EU went to the polls in early June. The results in France were so startling that Emmanuel Macron decided to call for a snap election for the French Parliament. Jean, can you help our listeners understand what a shock that was and how we got here?
It was a big, big shock for everybody in France. And, you know, we're still struggling to find out what will be the possible consequences. It's been a very controversial decision by the president to call a snap election. Now, let me try to sort of make sense of, his decision, if I can. After the presidential election in 22, there had been no majority in parliament. So essentially, the government had to use all the constitutional means to let its law pass. That means the use of the, in particular, Article 49.3, which is the possibility for the government to put its mandate, its responsibility at stake. And if there is no vote of no confidence, then the legislation is approved. So he used this instrument repeatedly with some success, but at the cost of antagonizing even further the voters because they resented that it was not legitimate anymore. It's an interesting change with respect to the past, because in the past we had a government under Mitterrand, which actually used repeatedly this instrument to pass legislation. And at the time, it was considered legitimate. Now, not anymore. So after the European Parliament election, candidates of the of Renew, the president's party, less than half what the National Rally got. So basically 15% instead of 32% for the National Rally. Not counting, actually, the rest of the extreme right. Governing had become an extremely difficult exercise because the legitimacy of the government had been severely damaged. And the risk was that for the next 3 years, it would drag on and government would stumble and would at some point lose a vote of no confidence. And so Macron decided to take the initiative and call a snap election. And he explained this way: I have no perspective of having a stable majority, so let's give back the vote to the voters and let them decide what they want to get as a majority in parliament. So that was the origin.
How unusual is it for the French to vote on the parliament separate from the presidential cycle?
It's always like that. There are two different elections, and in principle, they're not synchronized. Now, they've been synchronized because it's a 5-year term for both, and so they've been synchronized since the mandate of the president has been shortened to 5 years. Before, it was 7 years, so that was a rule that they wouldn't be synchronized.
I see. Do you remember when they were synced up?
Yes, that was a constitutional reform in the early 2000s.
So it's been that way for a while. No, I appreciate your walking us through that, because the French system of having separate elections for the parliament and the president, and then each election has two rounds of voting, can be very confusing to follow from the outside. André, what are the key points coming up now, and what should people who are not French be watching to try and make sense of all this?
Indeed, there will be two rounds of voting, the first one at the end of June, the second, the 7th of July. What is important to understand, because the system is different for parliament election than for presidential election, although both of them have two rounds. In order to qualify for the second round, you need either to be the first or the second in the first round. So the first two of the first round get qualified, but others, maybe a third, potentially even a fourth, but that would be extraordinary, can qualify provided that they get 12.5% at least of the registered voters, not of those who have actually voted, but of the registered voters. So the fact of going to vote and having a high turnout or having a low turnout has an impact on how many votes you need to get in each district in order to qualify if you are not number one and number two for the second round, to pass this bar of 12.5% of the electorate, of the registered voters who have turned out.
And do people vote for a specific candidate or a party list?
They vote for a specific candidate, but that specific candidate typically is part of a party. But indeed, as it is often repeated, you have separate election. Each district is separate from another one. And people vote a lot for people that they know because they are typically local people, maybe the past member of parliament. It is not at all like in the European election, where this is exceptional for France. This was a one district election. All of France is one large district and it's proportional. So there people indeed voted for parties, although parties may have an identity with a person. But there it was a national identity. In the parliamentary election, there is only local identities, although the local identity may be partly identified with the party to whom the candidates belong.
That is super helpful. And how would you compare turnout that we saw in the European election with turnout that is expected for this one, particularly given how high the stakes would seem?
So the turnout for the European election in France, like in most other countries in the European Union, tends to be fairly low compared to national election.
Although the gap has narrowed.
The gap has narrowed, that's right. But in France, the election that attracts the most voters, that is the highest turnout, is the presidential election, because there, in a sense, the stake is very high and the personal identification is very, very high. So people vote for a person. They don't vote for a person and a party. At the moment, the indication is that for this coming election, the turnout will be high compared to legislative election of this sort. There seems to be a lot of interest. It's a snap election. It has been put forward as a crisis, that the way the president announced it. We are in a situation of crisis. I need to call a snap election. And yes, this is, in a sense, the general atmosphere is one of crisis, and people feel very much involved, although it's the beginning of the vacation. And one hears that many people are taking sort of absentee ballots. They will vote by giving a procuration to someone else or a different manner.
Any guesses on how high the turnout will be? Could we see 75, 80%?
No, I don't think so. But, I agree with André. It's going to be higher than in the European election and higher also than in the normal general election.
Super interesting. So now tell us who's running. And I know we have to sort of personify that a little bit with the leaders, but we have President Macron from the Liberal Renew Party. So then we have Les Républicains, that's the party of Sarkozy?
Yes, that's the party of Sarkozy that was in the long distance a party created by de Gaulle. But they have now split, with part of them, including their president, joining the national rally, and part of them remaining without making this move. And so the split is A significant number has left the party and has joined the national rally, but the majority still remains.
And who is the head of the party who joined the national rally?
A person called Éric Ciotti. He's from the southern of France. His decision was based in part to local considerations.
Jean, can I interject? You said that they have joined the national rally. I think this is not literally correct, right? They've not joined the party. They've made an alliance with the national rally. So there's not a merger of the two parties.
You're right to correct me.
But it's a really interesting distinction for those of us outside, because an alliance between the historically mainstream center-right and the historically extreme far-right seems shocking from the outside, and that the politics have converged so
from
much.
From the inside, too.
Wow. So if you can help us then understand how we got from the National Front to the National Rally, which Le Pens are involved, I know a short recap would help some of us.
So the National Front was created by Marine Le Pen's father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, back in the 70s, right?
Something like that, yes.
And has been present in presidential election ever since. But initially, they were a fringe party. They had a strong negative reputation, not least because of the anti-Semitism of the father, and because they were considered, you know, not a parti de gouvernement, as we say. And Marine Le Pen, having taken control of the party, having actually split with her father politically, has started a move towards the center, so dédiabolisation, as we say, and successfully has gained respectability. So she made it to the second round in 2017 against Macron. She lost badly because she performed badly in the debate. She made it also to the second round in 2022. She improved her performance, having actually, distanciated herself from the project of leaving the euro. And then they've continued gaining support. So the reason for gaining support, I'm not saying it's just a matter of respectability. It's a matter also of, understanding what's happening in the French society and why the French are so frustrated, and actually pandering to their frustration and giving them the hope that with them in power, it will be different.
And where is the left and the historic center left in all of this?
The center left was fractured by the decision by François Hollande, the president, to depart from his initial program. And shortly, a few quarters after he got elected, to embrace a supply-side policy, which did not go down well with the rank and files and actually fractured the Socialist Party. So that's why Hollande, in the end, concluded that he could not run again, and that made the way to Macron's candidacy.
So who's representing Hollande's party now?
It still exists. It's still part of the National Assembly, but it's a small group. And the leader is Olivier Faure, but he's not a very strong figure.
Maybe I add a couple of points. First, on Marine Le Pen and her rise between the 2017 and 2022 presidential elections. In 22, she got a fairly high score in the second round of the election, more than 40%. So it was not a close election between her and Macron. Macron won fairly handsomely, but for a candidate of the national rally with some background in the National Front, even though she has done a lot to break with that background, nonetheless, to have more than 40% of the presidential vote in the second round in 2022, I would say, was a very high number, and certainly a number that indicated that, contrary to what had been expected so far, and people have been talking of sort of this glass ceiling, that yes, you know, she can do well, but she can never break the glass ceiling of actually getting elected. I think people could start seeing in 2022, with this more than 40% of the vote, that she was increasing her vote, and that it was not completely absurd to think that the next time around, she could get elected. So I think that's a big information. Now, why is that the case? Why did she do pretty well in the 2022 election? In my view, there are two reasons. You can call them both negative, but I would call them in a sense positive. I mean, people are adhering to a view and something other. So there is no doubt in France, and that also is the reason why we have now this alliance between some of the old party of Sarkozy with her. There is a sizable part of the electorate who feels that migration, and in particular migration with a lot of Muslim citizens, is a problem in France. And they have been calling for national preference, that they should be, in a sense, two kind of residents, if not almost two kinds of citizens, those of quote-unquote French origin and those of foreign origin. And there is a part of the electorate in France, clearly, that feels that, yes, there is too much migration, there is too much that has been giving away about the issue of laicity, which in France is a very, very big matter, probably more than in any other country in Europe or in the United States or in the United Kingdom. The French view on, you know, on laicity is very, very strong and creates a very strong opposition. And there's been all of those matters about the headscarf and other issues. And also, obviously, there's been a number of terrorist issues, the crimes. So all kinds of issues that have raised the temperature. You could almost say it goes back to the French in Algeria and the war of Algeria.
It sure sounds like it, given how many French citizens and famous French folks were born on African soil or born outside of, the main chunk of France the size of Texas that we Americans like to think of when we think of France.
That's right. So I would say there is a bit of a remnant of the colonial past that continues with this migration issue. And it does divide the French society, I think, heavily. And she is the one whereas, although that topic has been there for a long time, and Sarkozy himself was toying with all kinds of ideas that were, you know, border case. So that is the main French party at the time, and the president at the time was sort of saying all kinds of things that was, say, border. She then really came out, as her father had already done, but saying, this is really an issue, and we are the party that will tackle the issue of migration in a manner that no other parties would do. So I think there is part of the electorate that is voting for her because she's bold on migration and on this notion of national preference.
Not unlike Giorgia Meloni in Italy.
Yeah, and I want to come back to the Le Pen.
Not unlike, but I just want to make another. So that, I think, is one reason why she's gathering votes. An issue that exists on the right, maybe there are some voters on the left as well, but who feel that, you know, she is really saying what we have been thinking for a long time, but no other politician dares saying or acting about. I think there is another factor, which is an anti-Macron vote.
Yes, but before we go there, I would like our listeners to get a sense of the rest of the left. I'd like to introduce Raphael Glucksmann, who has founded a new center-left party, although he's a member of the European Parliament, not running for French Parliament, as I understand, and also Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is a recurring and controversial figure on the French left. Jean, are these the names we need to know if we're trying to think about who's on the left side? Are there other names? Like, are they a factor in this round of voting?
Let's start with Mélenchon. Mélenchon is a former socialist minister, actually, under Jospin, and who gradually moved to the left, also in order, most probably, to capture some of the voters who resented the policy of the center-left and who were frustrated by the course of events and the course of policy. So in a way, he played the same card than Bernie Sanders in the US or Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, you know, taking very hard left positions. In his case, he's always been very open on immigration, but he's trying to attract the vote of the Muslim community, taking a distance with the strong secularism André was presenting. So in a way, it's a sort of populism on the right and populism on the left. They agree on several things. I mean, they have a similar vision, for example, of globalization and the damages of globalization. They are both, protectionists, but they depart very strongly on this issue of secularism and on immigration.
Glucksmann
came from nowhere, anyway. He created his own small party. He benefited in 2019 from the disarray of the Socialist Party. No, it's sort of not even a party. I mean, something very smallish. Certainly not with a sort of national scope that a party would have, but got supported by the Socialist Party. And then, after having served a full term as a member of the European Parliament, he doubled down and, this time he got 15%. And the people who supported him, in part, were disappointed Macron voters who went to vote for Glucksmann because he comes out as someone who has conviction, I mean, who has beliefs and is strong about his beliefs, and that's what many Macron voters resent about their president, that they don't know what he stands for.
When we come back, we'll talk about how Macron got himself into this predicament. I'm here with Jean Pisani-Ferry and André Sapir talking about Emmanuel Macron and this election he's gotten himself into. President Macron, on the one hand, has had a very ambitious European agenda. On the second hand, he has alienated many of his fellow European leaders because they perceive a lot of his more centralized proposals as being really crafted around specifically French interests rather than the greater good. On the third hand, people in actual France are really mad at him. And on the fourth hand, when it seemed like he might lose power, financial markets were not happy. So how does someone get their head around this? Why are people in France so mad at this guy?
Well, I would say there are three separate issues. I think that one has to do with a structural issue that goes beyond Macron, as applied to many presidents, is the French system itself of the president having so much power and the constitution giving the president so much power, including what has just happened now, that he dissolved the assembly and call for snap election. It's not something that President Biden or even President Trump could do. So a U.S. president has a lot of power, but he could not have called for snap election. And so there are not many countries where you can do that kind of call, where you have that kind of power. So I think the personalization of the president, if I can say, sure, a president, Biden in the United States, or Trump, or prime minister in the UK, or prime minister in a number of countries, or the chancellor in Germany, there is personal, a lot of personal element. But I think in France, not only the president is directly elected, like in the United States, but on top of that, there is less power on the part of the House or the Senate to countervail. So the personalization or the accumulation of power by the president is such that there is at times, and it has happened many times before, including since De Gaulle called for this new, you know, French Republic, the Fifth Republic that we are under, that there's been a lot of antipathy during crisis time for the president. The president gathers all the antipathy at times. So I think this is, in a sense, something that has happened before. You remember the time of Sarkozy, there was something similar. But I think there are two other elements besides this structural element. One, I think, has been some of the policies that Macron has put forward. I think a number of policies that he did put forward were very well received. And I think his management of crises, the COVID crisis, the energy crisis, his ability to deal with crisis, I think has been very well received. And you know, his view that he has put policies forward that were very useful. But then you also took on policies that have been extremely divisive. And one of those policies has been the reform of the retirement age. We as economists may argue that this was a much needed reform, and that, you know, bringing the age of retirement from 62 to 64 is still very low compared to many other European countries where the age of retirement is already 67. But given the French history and the fact that the retirement age had been at 60 and then was raised at 62, and also the way it was managed, I think there was a lot of opposition. And the process by which eventually it went through Parliament was an extremely, extremely divisive process. And then I would say, finally, there has been his style. And I think his style is probably the most damaging. He clearly, not only has a lot of power given to him by the Constitution, but there's nobody besides him. Other presidents had in government important figures who could share part of the weight of the decisions, and sometimes the difficult decisions that governments or the people in power need to take. In his case, there is the president, and then there are people who are completely unknown to the electorate. They are not people who were mayors of important cities. They are not people who were heads of important parties. They are sort of people who really owe everything to the decision of the president, who disposes of them as he wishes. And I will just conclude by saying that something that I found very, very difficult. The president, for the election that he called, had to, by constitution, had to consult three persons: the heads of the lower house, the head of the upper house, and probably, Jean, correct me, his prime minister. It is said that all three of them were against calling for the snap election, and nonetheless, he went ahead. Now, it's perfectly legitimate from a constitution viewpoint, because all he had to do is consult those people. And he did consult. And when he made the announcement, he said, I have consulted with the relevant people and I've decided. So formally, yes, he consulted people. But the fact of the matter is that the three people that he consulted were against it. So he has to assume the weight of that decision all alone. He cannot sort of rely on the fact that, you know, my prime minister, the head of parliament, the head of the lower house, the head of the upper house, they were all thinking that this was the right decision for France. And so it becomes very much a personal decision. So everything has become personal. And I think that is really very, very damaging.
Yes. Let me add a few points. I don't disagree with the gist of what André said. First, perhaps on the pension reform. One factor is that in 2019, Macron had introduced a reform of the pension system whose cornerstone was that the problem was not so much the deficit of the pension regime. Actually, it was not projected to be in insignificant deficit. It was the fragmentation of the pension system, that there were so many, you know, different regimes for different professions, etc. And so he campaigned on the idea of a unification of the pension system. People, you know, were mildly supportive, and then gradually they got opposed to this reform, in part because it was explained in a confusing way. And then came COVID, and then the reform was suspended. And when, after the second presidential election, Macron put forward another pension reform, he had forgotten everything about changing the rules and just wanted to change the parameters, which is, you know, something people did not understand because they had still the memory of Macron saying the problem is not the parameters, it's the rules. And now he said it's all about the parameters and we keep the same rules. So that was, I think, what antagonized many people. In general, as regards the style, I would say, you know, it's more than a matter of style. It's a matter of really people don't know what he stands for. He campaigned in 2017 by saying, I want to end this sterile position of the left and the right. And then when they are in government, they just do the same type of policies. And that was actually fueling the resentment vis-a-vis both parties. And he said, I'm going to, you know, pick and ideas that are both good ideas from the left, good ideas from the right, and that's how I'm going to campaign and how I'm going to govern. And at the time, this was a proposition that attracted a lot of sympathy because people said, okay, yes, perhaps this move from right to left and back doesn't deliver anything positive, and perhaps to sort of go for the central route and to, you know, explicitly accept that you're going to depart both from the doxa of the left and the doxa of the right was a good positioning. Now, having said that, he sort of did not completely deliver. And so people lost confidence because they said, we don't know what he stands for. We don't know what his view, his policies. And so they got angry against him. On top of the governing style, as André said, which was also a factor.
When we come back, we'll talk about what next. These elections come up. Can you all walk us through what are the possible scenarios and how financial markets might react to those scenarios? Certainly at the extremes, there's a fear of a right-wing landslide, a no-holds-barred approach to blowing out the budget, and a huge French debt crisis that spreads all through Europe. That's the worst-case scenario. I'm not even sure what's the best case scenario, that things kind of sort of stay not so bad, and then a lot of space in between. So I would love to hear the different ways this can go.
We basically don't know. I mean, Macron's choice was to call snap elections, giving very short time to parties to put their thoughts together and decide on a program. So immediately the result was that the National Front, the National Rally, had a program for the presidential election and started from this program. And we don't know yet exactly where he's going to land. And on the left, you had a sort of rushed alliance of the France Insoumise, the Socialists, and the Greens to put together a joint program, which they call the program of the new Popular Front, which is, from an economic standpoint, the simple addition of all the promises that they made separately, and even more, because they're going very, very far. By doing that, they just indicated that they have no hope to coming to power, to exercising the responsibility of governing the country. And so we're in the paradoxical situation where the National Rally is getting more responsible fiscally, and the left is fairly irresponsible fiscally and economically. So that's the situation we're in. In between, you have the party of the president, which basically continues on the same track with some minor additions here and there.
Maybe I can add something here. First of all, I should say that my thesis is that you can only understand what is going on at the moment and what will happen after the results of the election if you understand that everything is turned towards the next presidential election. So everything is super strategic here. I don't think that anyone has their eyes set on the short term. Everybody's positioning themselves, including the president, Macron, towards the 2027 election. So, number one, you have to keep in mind that he, Macron, will have done two terms by 2027, and by constitution, he cannot run again. So, someone else will come after him. Clearly, the last thing that he wants, in terms of the history books, is to be succeeded by Marine Le Pen or by Jordan Bardella, by someone from the National Rally, that from a historical perspective would be terrible, that he would have done the opposite of what he said he would do at the beginning. He said he would pursue policies so as to make sure that people would not be tempted to vote for the National Rally in 2027 and then would elect a president from the National Rally. That would be a failure, in a sense. He would see that, and I think rightly so, he would see that as a failure of his two terms. That's what he would be remembered in the history books for, not for the reform of the pension, not for the handling of the COVID crisis, but for the fact that he ushered a president from the extreme right that he had fought against and that he had won in TV debates. So, I mean, it is understood that, okay, he called this election now, thinking that potentially, indeed, the party of the National Rally would win the assembly election, would then form the government, and because they are totally inexperienced and their program is not very credible, they would lose all credibility during the next 3 years in power, and therefore would have zero chance to win the presidential election, much lower than they have at the moment. So that's potentially his strategy. Obviously, the National Rally understands as well as he does and as we do, and all the other parties understand that. So possibility number one is that, yes, the National Rally does win outright majority in parliament. That's not at all a certainty, but it's a possibility. If that is the case, then whether they like it or not, basically, politically, they will have no option, that party, but to form the government. Okay, they will not be able to say, well, we won the election, But we don't want to be the government. Macron will appoint Bardel as prime minister and will make a government, and they will have to govern. I think they will have to govern carefully, thinking of the 2027 election. That's a possibility. Possibility number two, the National Rally comes number one in the election, but does not have a majority. In a sense, find itself in the exact same situation as the party of Macron today. They have a plurality in parliament, but they don't have a majority, and therefore they have difficulty to pass legislation, even to pass the budget. So what would they do? The president of the party, Bardella, has announced, and from a strategic viewpoint, I think he would be right to do this. He said he will not then attempt to form a government because he doesn't want to be in the situation precisely where he would have a government. It would be a mess, and it would be very easy to turn, well, you know, you are making a mess of this opportunity that you wanted. You know, you wanted the premiership, and now you have it, and you are making a mess. Why should he do that? So either he has a clear majority and he will do it, or he does not have a majority, he will not do it. Now, does another party have a majority? If he doesn't get the majority, does the left have a majority? Well, maybe yes, but extremely, extremely unlikely. So we could have a situation where, like today, there are three blocks. This time, the biggest block would be the National Rally, not the party of Macron. The second block will be the left, but still they don't have a majority. And then there will be a third block, which will be the presidential party, which would still have a number of votes. How will those three manage to make a government? That is going to be very, very difficult. Those three are not going to be able to make an agreement to form a majority. And what I personally fear, maybe some hope, is that the result of that is that we are going to have presidential election. Because remember that the prime minister is appointed in France, not by parliament, but by the president. So it's the president who looks at the results of the election, appoints a person to be the prime minister, and that prime minister does not even have to get a majority in parliament, doesn't have to have a vote like in most countries, where you would need a vote to confirm that person. You don't need that, but he needs to pass legislation, and he needs to pass a budget in particular. And there will be a budget in the autumn, like in every country. So Macron may not find a person, if no party has a clear majority, he may not find a person who will gather a majority in parliament when it comes to pass legislation for the budget. And if that is the case, then I would say we are in a crisis because people will turn back to Macron. It's Macron who called the election. And now Macron will be called upon to find a solution to the mess. And if there is a mess, then naturally the country will turn to Macron and say, well, you put us in this mess. You are responsible for this mess. You have lost legitimacy to be the president since you cannot appoint a government. There's no government. And then we will have, in a sense, not snap election, but we will have presidential election. So it is uncertain. Wait until that result come about and you have more uncertainty.
Can they do a presidential election early or do they have to wait for the 5 years?
No. He can resign. Okay. I agree with André's scenario. I mean, it's not the only one. Clearly, I agree roughly with the probabilities he gave. I think the idea of Macron when he called a snap election was, well, perhaps he had a sort of, you know, first best scenario in which he would win parliamentary election. He had a sort of second best in which he would form a coalition with people from the center right and the center left. And so what he said explicitly in his press conference immediately after having called the snap election, that he would govern with excluding the extremes, so excluding the National Rally and the France Insoumise, and govern with the rest. But the likelihood of this bloc commanding a majority is very slim. So then we sort of down to the scenario that André just outlined, for which a way out could be a sort of technical government with a technocrat, an agreement to pass a number of laws. I wouldn't exclude that, but I wouldn't exclude either the possibility that there would be enormous pressure on Macron to resign.
So we're about out of time. Any final thoughts about how worried we should be or what to expect next?
Well, as we said, it's difficult to reason in terms of scenarios because there are too many scenarios. One thing that's clear is that the programs that have been put forward by the National Rally and by the left, so we, for the National Rally, we don't have the full program yet, but we have elements taken from the 2022 presidential platform. And the risk is that the inspiration remains or will remain very adversarial to Europe, very protectionist. And so the risk there is really that the European system would be blocked, really. Someone has made the calculation that if the French elect an assembly dominated by the National Rally, they would be a blocking minority in the council. So it would prevent major decisions at European level. And at the same time, you could have, even National Rally says we are sort of coming to terms with the reality of being in the EU. They want to exit the electricity market. They want to change migration laws. They want to implement protectionist policies at national level. So there are plenty of decisions they would take that would represent a major roadblock to what we need to do, which is to, concentrate on the priorities, concentrate on increasing productivity, concentrate on achieving, moving forward with the green transition, preparing enlargement. I mean, those are major priorities, and those priorities, they wouldn't be the priorities of the National Rally. So that would be a major setback for Europe. Now, on the left side, their program consists in additions of measures that are all costly. So certainly, if they would come to power, but I don't consider it likely, markets would frighten and there would be immediately a fiscal crisis. So I don't think that the kind of scenario we have to consider for the reason that fact that they are putting forward such a program indicate that they don't have much hope to getting access to power.
On that sobering note, thank you both so much for joining us on this French election edition of The Sound of Economics. We have Bruegel's senior fellows, André Sapir and Jean Pisani-Ferry. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. You can find all of our economic reports, projections, and analysis on our website, Bruegel.org. You can find this podcast and all of its siblings on all of your favorite podcast platforms. And I know I learned a lot today. I hope the rest of you did too. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time.